Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, back again for another episode of the Nolecast. Bud, we have been able to do these with a pretty significant amount of consistency throughout the summer and want to thank you and the listener for that. Certainly want to thank Louisiana Hot Sauce for that and the role that they've played. Just a fantastic addition to the podcast, just as they make for a fantastic addition to any meal. I keep a bottle at my desk at work. I've got too many bottles here at home to keep track of. And whether you're putting it on a finished product, whether you're just using it, as I've become real fond of just kind of a blend of olive oil and Louisiana hot sauce on either some vegetables that you're about to cook or a meat you're about to put in the oven, it's just a fantastic addition to really just about anything that you want to do. And certainly it's been instrumental in allowing us to kind of take this in the process of where we wanted with a more consistent product, hopefully a higher quality product in the end. And before we get started tonight, just as always, wanted to thank our friends over in Iberia, Louisiana, and what they've made possible for this podcast.
Absolutely, man. A great sponsor for us, a national sponsor that lets us do this more consistently. And, we were going to have this out for you Monday morning. Unfortunately, Georgia Power is not as consistently good as Louisiana Hot Sauce is. And, man, we went over our show notes and just kind of a little behind the curtain here. And then Ingram texted me because I couldn't hear him anymore on Skype, which we used to chat. And he said, my power just went out. And I said, huh, okay. Because we were going to record before Game of Thrones. And then it didn't come back on until, what, like 10:30 or something. So I wasn't going to do the midnight recording thing.
Yeah, it was bizarre. Really never had any rain. Just a little bit of thunder and lightning in the distance. So anyway, we got a Monday morning, early Monday morning, and hopefully we should have this out to you, the listening audience, somewhere around noon or so. And look, there's a lot of interest in the fan base as far as recruiting and what went on over the past 5 or 6 days. But we mentioned this is kind of the apex of the summer recruiting schedule, and if you're a listener and you're not eager to delve, to fully jump into recruiting in July and August, I certainly understand. But do bear with us. This is kind of our final summer recruiting blast, and there's a lot of information to talk about. And on the whole, been a very, very successful past couple of days for Florida State in general.
It has, and it really, I feel like every summer, a couple people flip out about recruiting and get worried about it, but while I think there are pockets or elements that you can say, hey, maybe this isn't going quite as well, on the whole, Florida State is still recruiting extremely well. And throughout Jimbo's tenure, I think there's only one year where I thought there was maybe serious concern. And then they ended up having a huge year on the field and turned things around in a major way with momentum. And also, Florida ended up having Will Grier get busted for PEDs. And that kind of stopped their kind of momentum they were building that year, and things just kept rolling. And so I think this year is just going to be in the keep rolling category. And Ingram, speaking of rolling, Thursday afternoon, I was at Jimbo Fisher camp, like you mentioned. One of the hottest Jimbo Fisher camps I can ever recall, by the way. The heat index, the feels like temperature, I think was 104 one day and then 106 the next. And that was, I dropped so much weight, I had to go back to my car to get a belt because my pants were falling off. So that was interesting. But it was really hot, and Justin Fields rolls up into the parking lot on Thursday afternoon. That was kind of an element that people were freaking out about, at least on our social media. Hey, what, Justin Fields has visited Georgia. He's visited Auburn. He's visited Alabama again. And my whole thing was, look, I talked to the kid. He's never lied to me. If he doesn't want to answer a question, he'll just kind of say, not sure, or won't respond. And he told me, and we've been saying this for weeks, I am going to visit all of my top schools again. Mm-hmm. Like, not I want to, but I'm going to. This is going to happen. Just wasn't sure what weekends he was going to do it because he's also playing some travel baseball. This is, for listeners who are kind of new to the recruiting scene, Justin Fields, arguably the number one quarterback in the country. He plays for Harrison High School up there by you in Kennesaw, Georgia. I think that's what, a little west of you, right?
Yeah, that's a little northwest of the city, but great area, athletic talent in general, and certainly a hotbed for baseball. So interest that he's continued to be involved in travel baseball or whatever else that it occupies this summer.
So he rolls up with his dad, and he's met out there in the parking lot by Jimbo Fisher's son, Trey, and Damian Craig, and Odell Higgins, and a couple other dudes who are kind of associated with the program. And they walk into the Moore Center, and then he later hung out at Knoll Ball, which is kind of their little post-camp activity they do, and ended up staying staying the whole time and didn't leave for Gainesville until I think like 3:30 or 4 o'clock. And I can tell you, Florida State people who I've chatted with, they feel like they're really in this thing. And Ingram, that's about as good as you can ask for right now, right? And if some people think he may commit before his senior season starts, other people believe he's probably going to wait until the season. There's maybe a third option where maybe he does do it before his senior season starts, but then still takes official visits to other schools. I know he told, I want to credit here, Luke Stampini of 247, the Florida site, that he was going to take official visits. So whether he means he's going to commit first and then take the officials or wait, I'm not sure. But I think Florida State has done an excellent job recruiting Fields, and they got him on his second visit. And at this point, there's kind of a new development here in that Florida has dropped out of the race.
Yeah, so Florida Florida entertained Fields immediately after he left Tallahassee. As you mentioned, he went down and took part in their Friday Night Lights event. Interesting that that you started to hear positive feedback for Florida State in regards to insiders down in Gainesville. I saw that a couple different places that that it sounded like Florida State had a particularly good visit with him. I know Fields' crystal ball is now north of 50% for Florida State, and the crowd that lives up here in this neck of the woods, as far as Georgia fans, have started to not necessarily cede Florida State or not necessarily cede Fields to Florida State, but realize that that's much more of a significant challenge than maybe they thought it would be 7 days to 10 to 7 days ago. So Fields' recruitment very much headed in a direction that you have to like if you're a Florida State fan. And Florida picks up a quarterback in their own regard. Matt Corral, kid out of California. I've seen where a couple places have tried to like pin this as maybe the biggest recruiting development for Florida in the past 10 years or something like that. Which I would take exception with, but nonetheless, a nice pickup for them. And as you mentioned at the beginning, this does, for all intents and purposes, remove them from the Fields chase and the field for Fields, to use a bad pun there, as well. So a significant development for Florida.
It does. And, you know, with the crystal ball thing, the crystal ball is kind of a tricky tool for those out there. I wish I had time to do it more because I think it's kind of fun sometimes, but my checks don't say 247, so I do it like when I think about doing it. I don't sit on it all day, and I don't make enough picks like some of these dudes do. But there's kind of like a piling on effect, right? Mm-hmm. So if you look at it, who was the first guy who covers Florida State to put in an FSU crystal ball for Justin Fields? It was Bud Elliott. That's me. And then 6 minutes later, Josh Newberg did it of 247. And I suspect, I don't know, that Newberg and I heard about the same thing, which, and when if you look at the time we put in our picks, it was right about 30 minutes after Fields left campus. Then Luke Stampini of Gator Bait, who I'm sure heard something from the Florida side, put in one. But then we have a dude who covers the Texas Longhorns throw one in. Another guy I've never heard of. And then a guy for Auburn threw in one to UGA, which we'll talk about in a second. And then a guy who covers Penn State threw in one to Florida State. So you kind of got to pay attention to who is putting in the picks, right? Are they doing it because they're kind of piling on and they want to boost up their score, or are they doing it because they actually have information? And that it's tough to tell sometimes, but if you pay attention to like, who covers what school, that can be somewhat instructive. Anyway, most people I talk to think that Fields is either a combination of Georgia FSU or Auburn FSU. One of the main reasons why I put in the pick for Fields, and I'm not crazy confident in this, I just at some point you got to throw in a pick, I guess, on a top kid, is because the name FSU is mentioned both when you talk to Auburn people and the Georgia people. Now, the Georgia thing is interesting. Some people think the Georgia thing is a bit of a smokescreen. Other people don't. I don't think it's a total smokescreen. I think Justin does like Georgia. We know that some of his family wants him to go to Georgia. His sister is a year younger than him and is a Georgia softball commit. And his mom on Facebook is pretty open about wanting him to go to Georgia. I did not see her on this visit to Florida State. I don't know if she's been down to FSU previously. There's also the rumor that he went back to Georgia on Tuesday to hang out with or to hang out at Georgia a little more after previously having done that. I can't confirm that. That's just something that I had heard. So you know, take that with a grain of salt. It'll be interesting to see what happens here. I think Florida State's done a good job with him. Obviously, Georgia signed back-to-back five-star quarterbacks in as many years. Florida State has not, given that, well, they kind of did, but Malik Henry pretty quickly got himself kicked out of the program. Matt Corral, though, for Florida is a good get. I think people are acting like they bat out of the race for Fields. That's true, but they are so desperate for a quarterback. You don't turn down one five-star who wants in to go get another five-star if you're the Gators. I mean, their quarterback play has literally kind of been the thing holding that program back for quite a while. I think Corral's upside is very high. He plays the game kind of like Brett Favre. I mean, he's got no fear. He slings it from the pocket really well. He did get kicked out of Oaks Christian, the high school. But, you know, if you get into a scrap with the son of maybe the best hockey player of all time, who happens to maybe have donated a lot of money to that school in the past and had several kids go to that school, I think you and I both know who the headmaster is going to side with, right? So that actually is a good get for Florida, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a good get for them. You mentioned Brett Favre. I see a lot of Matt Stafford in Corral as far as just the arm talent. Look, if he got in a fight with Wayne Gretzky's kid, I don't really care about that. And if that's what led to dismissal, there's certainly some other, chatter surrounding that kid. It'll be interesting to see how he plays out. But, Florida, as you mentioned, has been woeful at, what they brought in at quarterback and certainly what they've been able to keep in. So it's a good get for them. I would argue that if you're the University of Florida, that it may be a little bit disconcerting that you're this deep into McElwain's tenure and you're just now getting this quarterback prospect. But still, it's a good get for them. Florida's had a real nice routine for coming in second for major quarterback prospects, and that does you a whole lot of no good whatsoever in recruiting. And I know they'd kind of positioned themselves with a lot of the major players in this year's class and didn't have any real traction either. And good for them to go ahead and get a kid of that rating. It'll just be interesting to see how he does in time on the campus and whether or not that's a smooth transition to college life.
The other thing I wanted to mention with Fields, and I agree with you about the Corral transition issues, is that he chose to go to visit Florida State instead of Alabama, right? Like, that was up in the air. Was he going to do...
Yeah, Alabama was having their, cook-off, like a big event.
Barbecue type thing, yeah.
Right.
Florida State's a little more football-focused with these things, probably because it's pretty tough to get to Tallahassee, so they really want to make them count. And so they really can't do quite as many events as some schools because you're just not going to get people to go to them because it's very remote. I mean, we did that study showing the population within a 2 hour and 5 hour drive, and FSU was like as remote as Nebraska in some respects, especially within that kind of 3 and 4 hour radius. Amari Gaynor, by the way, Florida State's linebacker commit from Tallahassee, is a really good recruiter. Just gregarious personality. Obviously, a top talent local kid out of Tallahassee, so he's always around campus, sort of like the unofficial ambassador. If you want to use the term bell cow, that absolutely fits. Just active on social media, funny, which I think you got to be able to joke around and stuff if you're going to be a good recruiter like that. And he was there to meet Fields as well. So definitely someone who is trying to help out this class in a good way, and I think doing a good job of it.
Yeah, by all accounts, he seems to. Certainly the name that you hear as far as the prospect that's leading Florida State's efforts. But let's transition into talk about some of the activities that transpired over the past 3 or 4 days. Florida State picks up a series of commitments. The first one that we will mention is a South Metro Atlanta prospect out of Stockbridge down there, Henry County. Marcus Ezard, wide receiver, kind of a big physical prospect, commits to Florida State, chose Florida State over Georgia.
Yeah, Marquez Ezard, you're right, big physical guy, north of 210. I mean, he's thick, man. He rolled up, and I was pulled over to get gas, and Andrew Miller, one of our guys at Tomahawk, was at check-in, and he sent me a picture, and basically we were kind of doing it in batches, and I would go through a couple photos. I'd say, all right, that's him, that's him, that's him, and he put him into our gallery, kind of a little behind-the-scenes stuff there. And he sent me the picture of Ezard, and I was kind of like, damn, that kid is, like, big. So, yeah, he does commit to Florida State. I think our listeners knew this was going to happen as of a couple weeks ago because we got back from the opening, and we said, yeah, Georgia's coaches are pretty sure Florida State is going to get Ezard. And this is not a kid that Georgia did not pursue. Georgia definitely wanted Ezard. What I was told yesterday, I called a good Georgia source of mine. He said, Georgia is going to take two receivers, but if they could have gotten the three that they wanted, then they would have taken three, and Ezard would be one of those three. So I don't think this is a situation where Georgia was like, yeah, we don't want you right now. Mm-hmm. You're right. Physical guy in the playoffs, made a number of really impressive, tough catches. Doesn't really win with speed, but that's, you know, perhaps not his game. He's not a guy who has to rely on the speed. I think he's physical and quick enough to get off press coverage, and definitely like him.
Second commitment picked up over the weekend was from Chaz Neal. Look, Neal doesn't maybe have the best film, and at times I'm curious as to how it made it into a highlight tape, but he did work out for Brad Lawing personally. By all accounts, Lawing immediately offered him a scholarship chose to go to bat for him, getting a scholarship. Neal accepted. Lawing obviously knows a hell of a lot more about the defensive end position than I do. I guess you got to have faith in that evaluation. Big, long prospect, very raw, but just give Florida State fans a better idea as to what they may be getting in Neal.
All right, so I did not get to see much of his defensive end workout because he split reps between D end and offensive tackle. So I feel like my D-end evaluation of him is incomplete, but I can say I wasn't blown away by what he was doing at D-end, personally. At tackle, he really he looked out of place. And granted, he's, you know, a D-end in high school, so that's not entirely surprising. I think this is just an upside play. They see a guy with some athleticism in a really big frame. I mean, he's – I don't know what his official stuff is, but he's probably 6'6", 6'7", 230, 240. You know, he's a big frame kid. I think he'll eventually be like 280. So that kind of gives you an idea. If you're staying on the D line and you end up 6'6", 280, who does that compare to? Well, the guy that immediately comes to mind for me is like a Giorgio Newberry. Mm-hmm. Potentially, that's the upside. Newberry didn't have a great career, but he wasn't terrible. Obviously moved it tight end a little bit at one point. Never really wanted to move to offensive tackle, and so that didn't happen. I don't think they're taking Neal to play offensive tackle because I didn't see Rick Trickett giving him a lot of attention. It was more the Brad Lawing stuff. And the commitment surprised me. I didn't really expect him to get offered, but he did, and they took him. I guess we'll just see what happens. There's not a whole lot of times where they offer a kid and you're real surprised about it. This one definitely caught me off guard.
Yeah, it's an interesting year at defensive end in general. I mean, you've got Neal.
It's a bad year.
Who were both pretty tepid about. Kirby was an early commitment that I think there's some general skepticism as to if he's legitimately part of this class.
He didn't work out. Stacey Kirby went up there and watched. Hung out, and I think there was just some general sort of, oh, you're not going to work out. Okay. Kind of not really thinking that might be the smart decision there by Mr. Kirby. Do not work out. At this point, I would be, I don't want to say shocked, but I would be pretty surprised if he ends up in the class.
Other names that get thrown around when discussing defensive end, Jarrett Jackson, Andrew.
Tuazama.
Tuazama.
Okay. Yeah.
Right. So options there, but a little bit of a larger question in general about defensive end this year. And as you mentioned, it's just not a great year in general for that position.
Especially not for the bigger bodied guys, right? Like there's some decent Jack type players out there. Patrick Joyner, who's already commitment in their class, they like a lot. I know Alabama's pursuing him pretty hard. Miami wants him. Florida wants him. So he's a guy you're like, okay, yeah, a lot of big schools want him. He's a damn good player. But he's really a Jack. He's not a big frame kid. There's not many big type, like not big talents, but big body DNs this year. You know, I think that's why maybe you take a Chaz Neal, enter to his arm as a kid. He's probably, I don't know, 6'6", 235, plays basketball, plays tight end as well, but he's going to be a D end if he ends up at Florida State. Jarrett Jackson out of South Florida, kind of the same thing, another big bodied guy. I think they want to have two big body DNs in this class, whether that's Neal and Tuazama, whether it's Neal and Jackson, whether that maybe eventually ends up Tuazama and Jackson. I don't know, but those are kind of three of the guys that they're pursuing for that spot. And then we'll see what they do if they want to take two Jacks and two bigs. But as of now, yeah, the DN position looks a little weird. Maybe we can circle back real quick too to the receivers.
I was going to say if we're going to have a broader defensive end conversation, let's do the same thing at wide receiver real quickly. Bud Warren Thompson, kid that we've discussed numerous times, Oregon commitment, was on campus, made it in. Jalen Waddell, a Texas prospect that we've mentioned numerous times as well. So like we did with defensive end, let's just have a quick overall group discussion at what is at wide receiver and where Florida State stands with it.
Sure. So they took Ezard, which means they're at three. They have DeMarcus Adams, who's kind of a slot. They have the kid we talked about how for a while he had no rating, but he was pretty good. And then they also have Ezard. So they have three. I think they're going to take five. And now their class might swell to like seven receivers at some point, and then they'll just kind of see who wants to stay in and maybe who's scared off by some competition. So don't be surprised if that happens there. Warren Thompson tweeted that he was 100% committed to Oregon, but he was 100% there in person with his mom at FSU camp. And not only there, but he also worked out, did a little tour thing, that receiver out of Armwood, which is basically just where 75 meets I-4, a little bit east of there. Pretty storied program if you follow recruiting in Florida. And so Thompson was there. He looked great, man. Warren Thompson keeps getting better and better. I mean, every time I see him, I think I come away more impressed. A guy that's growing into his own, kind of understanding what it means to dominate and getting the confidence to dominate. His cuts in and out of routes were violent. Caught the ball pretty well, despite some real poor throws. Some of the quarterbacks out there liked that. Jalen Waddell out of Houston, one of the best slot receivers in the country, stayed for multiple days and really didn't see him leave Jimbo Fisher's side too much, except when it was to hang out maybe with some current Florida State commits. Florida State's squarely in the mix for Jalen Waddell. I mean, it's he's a really good player. He's Marvin Wilson's former teammate at Bel Air High School there, Episcopal, which is in Bel Air, which is basically Houston. Mm-hmm. And then the third kid we need to mention is Jayshon Jones, who's a kid local to me, plays for South Fort Myers High School. Really good player, a two-way kid. I think he could also be a corner, but just keeps getting better. Came out there, really dominated, and I think impressed Florida State's coaches. Ran good times in the 40 after working out in extreme heat for 2 hours. Not a small kid either. I mean, he's a 6-footer. So that's going to be something to watch there. Kind of how I mentioned, hey, like, Do you think he's maybe better than the Adams kid they took? Mm-hmm. Potentially, yeah, I do. And you know, I didn't get to see Adams work out in June because I did not attend the June camp, so I don't have anything to compare it to there. But it wouldn't surprise me if Jones is in the class at some point with Adams and Ezard and everybody else, and then all of a sudden it maybe swells a little over what you're going to take, and then all of a sudden things kind of work out. Really good player there as well. And then Michael Pinckney, who we really liked on film, and we were kind of like, why is this kid rated 1,500 in the nation? And I can tell you that's basically just a mistake, right? There's no reason for him to be rated 1,500 in the nation. And yet he told us, yeah, I'm going to go talk to the coaches, and if they give me the green light to commit, yeah, I am going to commit. And he didn't get the green light to commit. And why? I think the main reason is because Florida State knew they had Ezard coming, because Ezard shot the commitment video apparently like a couple weeks ago with Rivals. So Florida State knew they had Ezard coming. Ezard is kind of your, in the same vein, more of a possession receiver, a guy who's going to move chains but maybe not hit home runs. And watching Pinckney work out next to Warren Thompson, I think that the difference in terms of foot speed and quickness was really stark. And I had to call an offensive coordinator at another school during his camp, not one that competes with Florida State. So I was calling him about sort of a lesser prospect, kind of a tangential kid, to ask him, hey, I saw that this kid has some interest in your school. What's his story? And in talking about it, and then he asked me, he said, they're not going to take Pinckney right now, are they? And I said, no, I don't think they are. I know he wants in. And he's like, yeah, I don't think he has the foot speed to play there, like the, not the top end speed, but the quickness rather, to be able to get off press. I said, okay, I can see that. I still think he's a really good player personally. And I think he's a guy who would be smart enough to pick up routes and he catches the ball extremely well. So we'll see if that's a mistake not taking him. But Florida State obviously believes that they're in better position with receivers maybe than some do. And if that's the case, then I understand not taking Pinckney at the moment.
Fair enough, Bud. That's a good little look there at the wide receiver position. Again, Florida State has three on the board. DeMarcus Adams, the kid that we just talked about, Ezard, and then the largest of the three, the 6'3", the green kid that committed a week ago or so, and then we still have another three or four prospects that kind of make up the wide receiver board. So we'll see how they close and what the class actually consists of, but that's just a good little position update. Two kids, we won't spend as much time on these kids as their 2019 kids, although it is very, very much significant prospects in their own right. Two of the better prospects in the nation at their particular position. Jalen Curry, wide receiver out of Texas, goes public with his commitment, and Florida State picks up one of the better defensive backs for next year's class, and Akeem Dent as well.
Yeah, really, really good news here for Florida State. Jalen Curry, like you said, one of the better receivers in the country out of Houston, was hanging out with a lot of other top 2019 prospects at the camp. Florida State's doing really well in 2019 as well as 2018. Another elite class coming, it looks like. Curry is explosive. He's thick. He's strong. Not the tallest kid in the world, but he's not short. That's a great addition to the class. Tim Brewster was tweeting stuff about how some programs are trying to go to a bowl. We're trying to win a national title. I don't know who that was referenced at, but considering he recruits the state of Texas, if he wanted to aim that at the Longhorns, that would not be inaccurate. And then Akeem Dent, who is the little cousin of Greg Dent, he's from Pahokee. Really, really good corner, man. I mean, 5'11 and a half, 165, which, look, as an underclassman in high school, that's fine. Great feet. He's got some length. Great competitive character. Is he a kid who's going to stick throughout the process? I don't know. I mean, he's a kid who might flip three or four times and still end up at Florida State. Who knows?
Exactly.
But this will be interesting.
This is probably not the end we hear of Mr. Dent's recruitment, but nice little starting point for Florida State to start off as a a leader or a party that secured a public commitment. And look, a fantastic prospect that you will probably hear more about. I doubt that this necessarily follows the Derwin James model of commitment, but it's a good starting place for Florida State nonetheless.
So a couple things here. Number one, I asked him, you know, because Greg obviously got dismissed. I said, you know, what did Greg tell you about Florida State? And he said, he told me Florida State's a great place. I got family up here. You know, he's all about it still. So clearly the coaching staff and Greg are still tight. Number two, as to the whole solidness of the commitment, we interviewed him before he made his commitment, a couple hours before, and he was talking about how he likes Florida State, and I said, would you say Florida State's your leader? And he goes, oh, no, I think it's too early to have a leader. I would just say Florida State is standing out. Okay, cool. He wants to visit several other schools before he names a leader. And those schools include, I think, Alabama, LSU, Clemson, and Georgia, if I recall. If I leave anybody out, I forgot. Sorry about that. And then a couple hours later, he commits. So that's kind of our basis for saying, all right, well, we'll see how long this lasts or if it does. One kid we forgot to talk about here is a safety commit in the class of 2018, sort of a recommit, John Huggins, who's out of Daytona, big-time hitter, kind of like a Trey Marshall-type hitter, if you will, maybe a little thicker than Trey was in high school. I don't know if he has the same top-end speed, but definitely a very strong player. John Huggins tried to commit in June, but Florida State told him no at the time because of his grades, and I guess they wanted him to make some academic progress, and he has apparently done so to some extent. I don't know how much academic progress you can make in 1 month, but took some credit recovery courses to kind of replace previous poor grades and got those done. So Florida State thought that was satisfactory progress and took him.
Well, good for the kid. Hopefully he continues along a similar trajectory. You're right. Those academic situations normally take a couple years to develop and are hard to resolve in a matter of weeks, but sounds like he's on the right path, and hope for him that continues to follow that trajectory. But some other kind of developments from the camp, one of my favorite prospects in the class personally, somebody that certainly received tons of accolade and conversation just about the performance that he turned in. Channing Tindall, the linebacker out of Columbia, South Carolina, high school that old Florida State recruit Knicks will be familiar with and will remember, provided the program with the Boulware brothers at one point in time. But Channing Tindall, rave reviews from his performance at the opening. Florida State looks to have very much thrown themselves into this recruitment by extending an official offer, and somebody that is one of the more dynamic linebacker prospects in this year's class.
Tindall's a stud, dude. I mean, he really might be the best linebacker in the country. Him or Tui Tatupu, who's out there on the West Coast, likely going to USC. Man, is he good. I mean, he's probably 6'2", close to 220, shows up jacked, goes through ladder drills cleanly and so fast that people thought that I had sped up the film on Twitter.
I was going to say, this is the type of disclaimer I want to see in your social media, bud, that a prospect does drills so impressive that you have to spell out that, no, you didn't actually speed up the film. So, yeah, Tindall looks just an incredible prospect.
And he's not just good at drills and working out and being jacked. I mean, he's really good at football. He was actually playing some safety at the opening too and was covering guys, I don't want to say well, but admirably from a safety spot. Clearly some receivers out there at the opening are going to dust him, but had a couple good coverage reps there as a safety. In college, he's definitely a linebacker, big-time hitter, big-time range, just an elite-level player. I think he's a five-star. I mean, if that's not a five-star linebacker, I don't know what is. But Amari Gaynor was in his ear all week. Tindall actually worked out, which was great to see, and as I mentioned. But him and Gaynor were kind of like one-upping each other on reps, and Gaynor would jam the heck out of a kid and put a couple kids into the ground. So then Tyndall would try to do the same thing. And I was like, man, this is really not fair to the vast majority of these kids.
It's going to be fun if you're a sophomore wide receiver and all of a sudden two linebackers start trying to out-testosterone each other and you draw them on a rep. That's going to be a lot of fun.
Exactly. So he was taking the coaching pretty well, seemed to have a good conversation with Bill Miller. Gaynor was in his ear the whole time. I know some other prospects there were also talking to him. So good to get him down. Clearly, he's very, very, very close to South Carolina, given that where he lives. But if any school can pull him away, I think it might be Florida State. You know, you look at an opportunity for some playing time potentially with Matt Thomas and Roderick Hoskins both being seniors this year. Certainly would have an opportunity for playing time there in 2018 and maybe the most talented prospect Florida State is in on this cycle outside of Justin Fields.
Well, good, impressive statement and really, really impressive linebacker prospect. So somebody will continue to monitor.
You know, Ingram, one of the things I had to do when I was up there at camp was find a spot to go to lunch and dinner. And luckily for us, we have a great relationship with For the Table Restaurant Group, which is, of course, Madison Social, Township, and Central. And I got to say, Madison Social, one of the greatest things I appreciated about Madso this week was the air conditioning. I walked in there and it was a perfect temperature, especially if you've been out in 100-degree heat for several hours, as I had sat down and enjoyed some chicken wings, great burger. Madso, man, the food is really good. Like they nail so many things, right? They nail all these great social events. The atmosphere is great. The beer selection is great. But that stuff doesn't matter if the food's not good, and the food is legitimately good there. It's a place if you like eating. I like eating. You will go and enjoy. I know a couple of people were having the chicken fingers with that Peruvian sauce that people want to put on just about every dish that they have there. That is pretty addicting.
Absolutely.
And then they got a cool little event coming up here, July 26th from 7 to 9 o'clock. If you are one of their social drinkers, when you have a social drinker shirt, pretty cool. It's the Ballast Point Brewing Company will be there with 8 different beers to sample. Have you had the Ballast Point Sculpin and the grapefruit?
I have not.
And the grapefruit Sculpin? Those are really good beers. I'm pretty sure Ballast Point's out of San Diego. A buddy of mine used to work for them. That's a hell of a brewery. So if you like beer, go check that out on the 26th. Just another fun night there. Also, if you take your tasting card over to Township that night, I get a liter of their grapefruit Sculpin for half price. So, damn it, I wish I was still in town because I think I would get at least 2 liters for half price and then probably Uber home.
Just great to be able to, great to be able to partner with somebody like that. Great to be able to hear your personal experience bringing them business over the past week and just look forward to having a working partnership with the people at For the Table moving forward. They've been a just incredibly supportive asset to us and have been instrumental in what this podcast has ultimately become.
No doubt, man. And also, don't forget to check out Central and Township as well. Central is their really cool Italian concept, indoor and outdoor seating there. Obviously, maybe a little more indoor focused right now, given the heat in town, but saw some people on the patio as well once the sun went down and a great, enjoyable experience there. Township is their awesome beer hall. And just look, 3 great restaurants sponsoring a great podcast. That's got to pair them number ones up, dude. Number one FSU podcast, number one restaurant group of Tallahassee. It just makes sense.
Bud, another guy that I love, just loved me some traditional linebackers, 6'2", 235, 240, maybe even is this kid's dimensions, Rosendo Lewis. Did I pronounce that right?
I say Rosendo.
Rosendo, okay. So Rosendo Lewis out of Deerfield Beach. Love his highlight tape as well. Again, just looks like a linebacker. Looks like a big, physical kid that could maybe project to play in a traditional mic. But where's number 42? When he makes contact with people, you realize it. Forward progress stops. Really, really interesting, intriguing prospect. Had one of the more humorous moments over the past couple of days for me is he said that Jimbo Fisher called him one of the best linebackers he's ever seen, which made me chuckle. But nonetheless, a kid that's very talented and could potentially join what is already a really or has the potential to be a pretty exceptional linebacker class for Florida State this year.
He's a thumper, man. He just thumps people. But like you said, you know, built like a refrigerator box, you know, moving all over the field. And I mean, for his size, I think he has good athleticism, but he's definitely, he looks different than a lot of these other kids. He's more of that traditional Mike role, going to be your run stopper. You know, can he cover enough? Florida State really likes him. Obviously, he's high on several other schools as well, including Miami. But I like Florida State's chances with him. I love watching Deerfield Beach play defense. That is one of the best high school defenses you will see in the nation year in, year out. And it's not just the talent, it's the mentality. These guys run and hit, and they play through the whistle. They gang tackle. There's a physicality and a nastiness to that defense that, you know, you don't necessarily see it at every school. And I love watching them. They just got dudes, man. Even guys who aren't necessarily like great prospects end up being great high school players for them. And they do a great job with that program. Lewis is definitely one of the top guys on FSU's board. And I think, you know, if you ask me, would he be a take right now? Yeah, I think he would.
His teammate, Ashton Pierre, give us an idea. You mentioned you love watching that defense, but what type of prospect is Pierre?
Okay, so Pierre is a different prospect. He's probably, I don't know, 30 or 40 pounds lighter than Lewis, but a lot more athletic as well. He's actually listed as an athlete on several recruiting sites, because I'm not sure that they know what position he's going to play. But Florida State worked him out at linebacker. I went over there, and that was kind of one of the first kids I noticed on Thursday morning. I said, okay, well, this kid looks like an FSU-type player. And you do this for a while, you kind of – I mean, you got hundreds of kids at this camp, right? Probably 400 or 500. So how are you – how are you going to sort through it? Eventually, you just know what you're looking for, right? You're like, okay, well, that kid looks somewhat bigger and more athletic than everybody else at his position group. I'm going to watch him for a minute. And he flew around, did a lot of really good things athletically. I know Florida State came away impressed. I believe he got the offer. I don't know if that's a committable offer at this point, but certainly somebody they're going to continue to pursue. Miami, South Carolina, Auburn have also offered him. And you spell his name, it's Ashtan, I believe, on most of his stuff. There's some with an O, I like him a lot. There was so I'm trying to figure out who this kid is, right? This is kind of an interesting story. And I Googled the name that I thought it was, because he told me his name was Ashton Pierre. And I didn't know it was spelled with the second A. I thought it was Ashton, right? Mm-hmm. And so I typed in Ashton Pierre and then the city that I thought he was from, because I didn't know he was from Deerfield at the time. And I was like, oh, no, like, because the first Google result was for a sex offender registry. And I was like, oh, damn it, man. Like, you know, you really like this kid, and then all of a sudden you see that. And then so I click through, and it's a picture of somebody who's totally not him, just shares the same name and hometown. So very unfortunate, but good for him to not be that guy. And then I continued watching him. So that's sort of the on-the-fly scouting you can do sometimes at these games. There you
go. Quick evaluation.
Yeah, yeah. Because yeah. I was, if it was him, I was like, okay, I'm going to move on quickly. yeah, just the stuff that happens here. But good for him not having the O in the name. The A in the name actually separates him from that top Google result there.
There you go. A couple other kids' developments from camp 2019. Florida State certainly had the large Georgia contingency of kids. 2019 is particularly talented in the state of Georgia, and we've spent a couple episodes talking about that batch of kids. Owen Popo, player who's maybe the number one player in that year's class, depending on where you look, made it down. Jalen Simpson, Jayshon Sheffield, just give us an idea of what, if anything, you took away from those kids' time down in Tallahassee this past week.
I mean, they just loved it. They were having a blast. They were doing the chop on the field. Popo, I think, is probably the least committed type of the four. Now, they're not committed, obviously. But Jalen Simpson showed up in an FSU hoodie. Kenyon Jackson, the receiver's committed to LSU, seemed to really be enjoying himself. Poe was hanging out with Jimbo Fisher. Jayshon Sheffield, who was also not committed, but
yeah, literally gave about the most committed interview I've ever heard for a non-committed kid. But yeah, sounds good.
One of the first good on that. One of the first instances of a non-committed player already recruiting for Florida State. He was talking about who else he's going to bring to Florida State, and he was talking about how next he's going to go visit Miami, and that his teammate or former teammate DJ Dallas, who's a freshman at Miami, was talking smack to him, and that he was telling DJ Dallas that the streak was going to continue, especially once he gets here. So not
I like that sound
not like committed
sound. Not but, committed though, bud.
But the five star is already talking smack to Miami players despite not being committed. And I asked him, but he knows what's going to happen, right? And he's like, oh yeah, it's coming. So not committed, but. If I look at our things to write up today, a Jayshon Sheffield draft, like to have kind of in the just editorial.
Good to have sitting in the hopper.
Yeah, we may need to have that in our editorial drafts section. I'm not saying it's going to happen soon. I'm just saying Jayshon Sheffield loves him from Florida State in a way that uncommitted prospects typically do not.
Good. Chris Bogle, big defensive end out of South Florida.
Yeah, man. I found out this week that his sister goes to FAM. So always good to have a little family connection, perhaps a reason for him to come up and visit more often. Big-time pass rusher, big hands. I mean, you shake his hand. This is kind of a good sign of pass rushers. They got the big hands. Typically, they end up being pretty good. Very good basketball player as well, but doesn't intend to play basketball in college unless he gets the chance to. At Florida State, he's not good enough to play, I don't think, for Florida State, and I'm pretty sure that they don't want their DNs doing that much cardio. They'd rather have him put on some weight. But still, that's a good sign. He loved working out with Brad Lawing. Really gushed about that. Really gushed about the school. And then final kid, I guess, for 2019 we should talk about is John Dixon, a corner out of Tampa, one of my favorite prospects in the class, and in the recruiting class, not in Florida State's class. He comes away with the offer. Know a lot of schools are very high on him. Florida, South Carolina, et cetera, really like him. And he, if you're a golfer out there, he balls in 7-on-7 tournaments in a Titleist hat. And not like on backwards. Like he literally, it's so easy to find because he's wearing his hat forward and it's a golf hat.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one of the more
and kills people
more
out there.
Humorous visual images that I could come up with in my mind.
I told him, keep wearing it, man, because like when I'm cutting these clips to find highlights and stuff, yours is the easiest to find.
I had to go do a quick little internet search and try to find that. That's pretty funny.
I think it's Titleist. Speaking of Titleist, did you see Spieth yesterday next to the TaylorMade truck?
I did not. I saw a bunch of social media response to that, but didn't witness it live.
Hopefully by the time this podcast is up, he will have hit his ball.
All right, bud. Like we said at the beginning, just going to be recruiting focused. You just had been in Tallahassee. This, as I've mentioned many times, is kind of the high water mark of summer recruiting season. We realize people have a love-hate relationship, but this just let it serve as a nice little ground floor as to where Florida State stands moving into the season. Obviously, a lot of the focus will move from here fully on to prep for game one, but wanted to get your opinion, get some of your insight and what you witnessed in Tallahassee and just put together as thorough a product as possible to reflect where Florida State stands post-Jimbo Fisher camp.
Yeah, man, happy to do it. Happy we could keep it somewhat concise. I know some people would probably appreciate an hour and a half of straight recruiting talk, but at the same time, some people do not want to hear about, you know, literally 15 and 16-year-olds for 45 mm-hmm. minutes. So we try to keep the 2019 part short there, focus more on the kids who are likely to be in the class and on campus in, you know, 10 months, not 20 months.
Fair enough. Well, we'll be back have one of these to you next week at the latest. As always, want to thank For the Table Restaurant Group in Tallahassee. Want to thank Louisiana Hot Sauce for all that they've done for us. And thank you, the listener, and look forward to speaking with you soon.
This concludes this episode of The Knollcast. Make sure to rate us on Apple Podcasts. Write us at thenollcast@gmail.com or tweet us at Knollcast. We're going to hit you with a little music from Rihanna entitled Desperado. Today's date is July 24th, 2017. For Ingram Smith and Bud Elliott, this is your producer, Judson Wright, signing out.
Desperado, sitting in a old Monte Carlo, a man whose heart is hollow. Take it easy, I'm not trying to go against you. Actually, I'm going with you. Gotta get up out of here and you will leave me behind. I know you won't, cause we share common interests.